And when we realized that it's going to be a miniature golf course, our vision was what was on Jefferson Avenue years ago. They closed up maybe 10 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever it was. And it was an 18-hole golf course, and it was, you know, small and kind of fit, you know, not necessarily the perfect thing for Central Business District, though I didn't even know what Central Business District existed. So we went to the meeting, and the first thing we noticed, and it was beyond obvious, is that the zoning board and whoever led the zoning board meeting was dismissive, was rude, and really that kind of set the ire. That gives more resolve to say, wait a minute, what are you doing here? Why aren't you even listening to us? We had questions, and no matter what we ask, it was, you know, it's done. Don't even bother thinking about it. We're moving forward. So it was the actions of the zoning board that kind of started the flame that was getting everybody very, very annoyed. You know, they were very nice to all the people who were there representing the Venture Golf. You know, gave them all the time in the world and let them, you know, expound how terrific this was going to be for kids and everything else. And as soon as somebody got up to oppose, even right in front of the beginning where there's some attorneys asked for continuance, it was basically, they never said it, but just short of shut up and sit down. We did file within 45 days. Even if we won and went forward, it's then a year and a half for it to snake its way through the court system. And the end result can go either way. They knew it and I knew
At
it.
the
In other
golf
words,
course.
we could have won or they could have won. Our biggest objection is not that they're about the miniature golf, but the way the process was handled, the fact that they changed it from Central Business District to recreational, they deemed it okay. Meantime, there is case law that says it's not okay. You know, if there wasn't case law and there wasn't a possibility that they could lose, they probably wouldn't have been as nice as they were.
Do you believe that second homeowners, which now make up a majority of most, you know, most Jersey Shore towns, including Margate, are second homeowners, well, are they kept in the loop?
I think it's the complete opposite. I think everything is designed so we specifically don't have a chance to respond, a la a December week before Christmas meeting on a major issue. Yes, there are issues that are routine where somebody has wants to put a dormer on or want to extend a property and, you know, it's the fence heights and things of that sort. That obviously goes on all the time. But this is a major change to the central, to the cult, what I think is the culture of that, you know, center of Margate. And they did it without any representation. In other words, they didn't have any open hearings. There was no sunshine at all. They just deemed it their decision. And then even on the variances that they requested for this particular property, they did it a week before Christmas on December when they knew nobody could be there. I would like to see, in today's technology, there's no reason in the world that a property owner, a taxpayer, can't have the right to vote on something that pertains to the local issues. Obviously, we can only vote on federal elections and even state elections in our, you know, in you can't have multiple locations. But in the case of a local issue, something like this, there was no reason that it can't be localized in the sense that they notify everybody on election day. Since 75% of the people are not full-time residents, so it's absentee ballot. And these are the five questions that pertain to Margate City. How do you respond? And, you know, and people be allowed to vote on local issues, even though they reside and vote on federal elections in another state.
It must have been tough watching how quick the construction crews were putting together this multi-level miniature golf course right there at the corner of Ventnor Avenue and Adams Avenue in downtown Margate. It's exciting to some and some others, not so exciting by seeing this very large, pretty complex family attraction being built. And my question to you, Mr. Ed Blumenthal, what's the one thing that you had on your side of this argument that made Mr. Benevento, who I find to be a professional man and a pragmatic man, and he, you know, he kind of knows he has to be a good neighbor. What's the one thing? Can you share that with us that made him come to the table or at least reach out to you to resolve this issue?
I think that using the same word, pragmatic, and that is that if this did go forward, he would have a cost to defend the action.
How long did it take for you and Mr. Benevento to go back and forth and to come to terms? How many calls? Were there face-to-face meetings? And what specifically did Mr. Benevento put on the table? And then you had to go back with your people and decide whether or not these givebacks were appropriate to drop your lawsuit?
It actually began with a face-to-face meeting. Actually, it was only about 3 weeks ago. And Mr. Benevento reached out to me saying that, you know, that can't we discuss this? And I was very willing to discuss it. I was getting ready for the meeting when that Enquirer article came out. And there was Mr. Benevento's lawyer, Balanson, said some personal things about me. And I was at that point getting ready to not attend the meeting or pass on the meeting with Benevento.
Oh, you were talking about Mr. Christopher Balanson.
Balanson, yeah. You know, he attacked me personally, which I said, you know what, maybe I don't want to do this. But realizing that the only person who would benefit from that would be Mr. Balanson, because the case would continue. So I did meet with Mr. Benevento. And in that conversation, we discussed some of the things that were very unsettling. This is besides the overall scope. We realized that that wasn't going to change. I mean, it's being built. The zoning board approved it. And it's going to be a couple of years before anything could change the fact that it was being built. So now that it's being built, what could be done to relax some of the objections that the neighbors had? And we discussed those. We discussed the fact that we didn't, thought it would be horrible to have it look like his properties and his other properties, where they were shuttered and shrink wrapped and looked terrible, and which would be that way for most of the year. And he agreed and said that, they will make sure that the lights are on and the plants are planted and kept, everything is kept up so that it doesn't look like a shuttered property most of the year.
Let me go from top to bottom here. What was the most important give back or concession, if that's the right word, that Mr. Benevento offered? I'm thinking that it's the hours of operation being cut back. Can you get can you give us some more detail?
He agreed that they would, at 11 o'clock, that would be the last time they would accept a player or players. And since a game for two takes a half hour, a game for four takes 45 minutes, so they pretty much finished up by 11:45. It was going to be shut down at midnight, and like I said, it was a minor concession. But let me finish. The point being that they had no intentions of keeping it open when there are no customers.
Yeah.
And then as being a resident, by the way, I'm not across the street, but we're a couple properties behind. Mm-hmm. So it's one property away from being adjacent to the rear part of the miniature golf, not across the street. But the explaining that, living there, I know that during the week in the summertime, there's very little activity. I mean, there's very few people walking up and down Ventnor Avenue. And he says, I said, frankly, I don't even see being any possibility of that many people playing. I said, I could be wrong. He said, well, frankly, he says, we have this in other areas, and we see that if there's nobody playing, we close early. So I took him at his word that when there are no active players available, that he will be closing it earlier than the posted times.
It was really nice that Mr. Benevento offered to reimburse those that helped to fund the opposition lawsuit using that GoFundMe page. That was that your idea or Mr. Benevento's? I thought that was very refreshing.
So it was a mutual agreement.
I don't think there was really almost any parking that was made available. So
there is none, and the fact that they did revert back to the two spaces that the zoning board approved or the zoning board required. And our complaint said that the two places were not enough, that it should be 10 or 15 places. It almost makes no difference to us as the neighbors whether or not there's parking or not, because there is none. There is none now, and there'll be continue to be none. So it's more of his concern. It's more of what he would need for his customers. It has nothing to do, since there is no parking, there can't be more no parking. There already is none. So it's more of his concern that his potential customers have a place to park when they get there. So it wasn't something that we were dwelling on. It was more of the size and scope of it, and the fact that the sign's now lower, and the building, the structure itself is lower, so it doesn't obstruct the views of the people who have homes around it. The noise and sound, the sound pollution and light pollution are something that is governed by Margate rule, and as long as they adhere to those rules, there won't be any problems. But the point is, as you explained, that it's the sunshine side of it. And there's no reason that when it comes to a major zoning change, that they should make it something that takes place during the summer months. When if there is a property owner and taxpayer who wants to be involved in the process, that they have the opportunity to do it. Doing it in the middle of the winter is, while maybe illegal, is definitely not is not an indication of them being willing to work with summer residents, property owners.
And but Mr. Benevento, I'm assuming that the last thing he wants is angry neighbors. Thus, you stepping up and putting together, even though it was a small GoFundMe page, it was enough to capture his attention.
For sure. I would not have had a meeting at all if it included an attorney. So it was all at each meeting, there's only two of them, was Mark and myself. No attorneys were present.
In today's Philadelphia Inquirer, Mr. Bailenson said something a little uncomfortable, I would assume. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it was unnecessary for him to, the everybody agreed to agree. The case or the action was being withdrawn. And for somebody to say, we were going to do it anyway, seemed to be childish to me, or not the type of thing that I would expect from a respected attorney. So I was surprised.